ಅರ್ಜುನ ಸ್ಯಾದೌ ಕುರುವನ್ ಗೀತಾಮೃತಂ ದದೌ ಲೋಕತ್ರಯೋಪಕಾರಾಯ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾತ್ಮನೇ ನಮಃ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ವೆಲ್ಕಮ್ ಬ್ಯಾಕ್ ಟು ಅಭವಿದ ಭಕ್ತಿಶಾಸ್ತ್ರಿ ಕೋರ್ಸ್. ವಿ ಆರ್ ನೌ ಇನ್ ದ 8th ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್. ಸೊ ಲೆಟ್ಸ್ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಅ ಕ್ವಿಕ್ ಓವರ್ ವ್ಯೂ ಆಫ್ ದಿ 8th ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಬಿಫೋರ್ ವಿ ಮೂವ್ ಇನ್ ಟು ದ ನೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ ಸೆಕ್ಷನ್. ಸೊ ಹಿಯರ್ ವಿ ಆರ್ ಫಿನಿಶ್ಡ್ ಫಸ್ಟ್ 3 ಸೆಕ್ಷನ್ಸ್. ದ ಹೋಲ್ ಫೋಕಸ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಇಸ್ ಆನ್ ರಿಮೆಂಬರೆನ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಎಸ್ಪೆಷಲಿ ರಿಮೆಂಬರೆನ್ಸ್ ಅಟ್ ದ ಟೈಮ್ ಆಫ್ ಡೆತ್. ಸೊ ಫ್ರಮ್ 9 to 13, ವಿಚ್ ವಿ ಡಿಸ್ಕಸ್ ಇನ್ ದ ಪ್ರೀವಿಯಸ್ ಕ್ಲಾಸ್, ರಿಮೆಂಬರೆನ್ಸ್ ಬೈ ಯೋಗ ಮಿಶ್ರ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವಾಸ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕಸ್ಡ್. ನಾವು ಕೃಷ್ಣ ವಿಲ್ ಟಾಕ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ರಿಮೆಂಬರೆನ್ಸ್ ಬೈ ಶುದ್ಧ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಹಿ ವಿಲ್ ಟಾಕ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಬಿಕಮಿಂಗ್ ಫಿಕ್ಸ್ಡ್ ಇನ್ ದ ರಿಮೆಂಬರೆನ್ಸ್ ಬೈ ಕಂಪೇರಿಂಗ್ ನೇಚರ್ಸ್ ದ ಮಟೀರಿಯಲ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಸ್ಪಿರಿಚುವಲ್ ವರ್ಲ್ಡ್ಸ್. ಸೊ ಲೆಟ್ಸ್ ಲುಕ್ ಆಟ್ 8.14. ಅನನ್ಯ ಚೇತ ಸತತಂ ಯೋ ಮಾಂ ಸ್ಮರತಿ ನಿತ್ಯಶಃ ತಸ್ಯಾಹಂ ಸುಲಭ ಪಾರ್ಥ ನಿತ್ಯಯುಕ್ತಸ್ಯ ಯೋಗಿನಃ. ಸೊ ಅನನ್ಯ ಚೇತ ಸತತಂ ವಿದೌಟ್ ಎನಿ ಡಿವಿಯೇಷನ್. ಅನನ್ಯಚೇತ, ಅನನ್ಯಚೇತ ಮೀನ್ಸ್ ಕಾನ್ಶಿಯಸ್ನೆಸ್ ಗೋಸ್ ಟು ಅದರ್ ಥಿಂಗ್ಸ್. ಅನನ್ಯಚೇತ ವಿದೌಟ್ ಲೆಟಿಂಗ್ ದ ಕಾನ್ಶಿಯಸ್ನೆಸ್ ಗೋ ಎನಿವೇರ್, ಸತತಂ ಕಾನ್ಸ್ಟೆಂಟ್ಲಿ. ವಾಟ್ ಇಸ್ ಒನ್ ಡು ಯೋ ಮಾಂ ಸ್ಮರತಿ ನಿತ್ಯಶಃ, ದಟ್ ಒನ್ ಹೂ ರಿಮೆಂಬರ್ಸ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕಾನ್ಸ್ಟೆಂಟ್ಲಿ. ಸೊ ವಾಟ್ ಹ್ಯಾಪನ್ಸ್ ಟು ಎ ಪರ್ಸನ್? ತಸ್ಯಾಹಂ ಸುಲಭ ಪಾರ್ಥ, ಐ ಆಮ್ ಈಸಿಲಿ ಆಪ್ಟೇನ್ ಫಸ್ಟ್ ಎ ಪರ್ಸನ್. ನಿತ್ಯಯುಕ್ತಸ್ಯ ಯೋಗಿನಃ, ನಿತ್ಯಯುಕ್ತಸ್ಯ, ಒನ್ ಹೂ ಇಸ್ ಎವರ್ ಎಂಗೇಜ್ಡ್ ಅಸ್. ಸೊ ಹಿಯರ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಇಸ್ ಟೆಲ್ಲಿಂಗ್ ದಟ್ ಫಾರ್ ಒನ್ ಹೂ ರಿಮೆಂಬರ್ಸ್ ಹಿಮ್ ವಿತ್ ಅನ್ಡಿವಿಯೇಟಿಂಗ್ಲಿ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಕಾನ್ಸ್ಟೆಂಟ್ಲಿ, ಹೀ ಈಸ್ ಈಸಿ ಟು ಆಪ್ಟೇನ್. ಇನ್ ದಿ ಹೋಲ್ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತಾ, ದಿಸ್ ಇಸ್ ದಿ ಓನ್ಲಿ ವರ್ಸ್ ವಿಚ್ ಯೂಸಸ್ ದ ವರ್ಡ್ ಸುಲಭ, ವಿಚ್ ಇಂಡಿಕೇಟ್ಸ್ ದ ಪ್ರೊಸೆಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಈಸಿ. ಸೊ ದಿಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಸಿಗ್ನಿಫಿಕೆಂಟ್ ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ದಿಸ್ ವರ್ಸ್ ಬೈ ನೋ ಸ್ಟ್ರೆಚ್ ಆಫ್ ಇಂಟರ್ಪ್ರಿಟೇಷನ್ ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಬಿ ಯೂಸ್ ಟು ರೆಫರ್ ಟು ಎನಿಥಿಂಗ್ ಅದರ್ ದನ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಯೋಗ. ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಇಸ್ ಟೆಲಿಂಗ್ ದಟ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಇಸ್ ದ ಈಸಿಯೆಸ್ಟ್ ವೇ ಟು ಅಟೈನ್ ಹಿಮ್. ಸೊ ಸುಲಭ. ಸೊ ಇಫ್ ಯು ಲುಕ್ ಅಟ್ ವಾಟ್ ದ ಪ್ರೀವಿಯಸ್ ವರ್ಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಟಾಕ್ಡ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಅರ್ಲಿಯರ್, ಯೋಗ ಮಿಶ್ರ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಇಟ್ ಇಸ್ ಆರ್ ಇದು ಅಕ್ಷರಂ ವೇದ ವಿಧೋ ವದಂತಿ ಛಂತಿ ಯದಿತಯೋಗಿತರಾಗ ವಿಶಂತಿ ಯದಿತಯೋಗಿತರಾಗ ಯತ್ ಛಂತೋ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಚರ್ಯಂ ಚರಂತಿ ತತ್ತೇ ಪದಂ ಸಂಗ್ರಹೇಣ ಪ್ರವಕ್ಷಿ. ಇನ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಟಾಕ್ಡ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ದ್ಯಾಟ್ ಇನ್ ದಿಸ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಇಟ್ ಸೆಲ್ಫ್, ಇನ್ ದ ಯೋಗ ಮಿಶ್ರ ಸೆಕ್ಷನ್, ಯೋಗ ಮಿಶ್ರ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸೆಕ್ಷನ್. ಸೊ ದೇರ್ ಇನ್ 8.10 ಹಿ ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪ್ಲೈನ್ಸ್ ದಟ್ one has to practice brahmacharya, one has to become free from attachment, one has to know the import of the Vedas, one has to chant om, and one has to in this way practice serious spiritual life in the away from the world, in the renounced order, then one can attain vishanti, one can enter into that absolute truth. But here Krishna is saying sulabha, and what is he saying? All that one has to do is remember him. So this is, if you look at the overall flow of this chapter, Krishna has talked about how by the process of Ashtanga Yoga one can remember him at the time of death. But here he is saying that that same thing can be attained, that same goal. What is the goal? Goal is Paramam Purusham Devim Yati. It was told that one has to attain the Parama Purusha. So when one has to attain the Parama Purusha, what is the means, what is that Parama Purusha? Ultimately it's Krishna. That's clear in this chapter we discussed earlier. So Krishna is saying, I can be attained, and I can be attained easily. That means whatever is the result that could have been attained by the process of Ashtanga Yoga, that can be attained also through the practice of the Bhakti Yoga, undeviating, undistracted Bhakti Yoga. Now, when Krishna talks about this, what is the implication? The implication is that Bhakti Yoga is far preferable to Ashtanga Yoga. That as compared to the demanding and grueling path of Ashtanga Yoga, by the path of Bhakti Yoga, we can move faster, much more easily in our spiritual life. So now, when Krishna is talking about Bhakti Yoga over here, what is he implying? He's implying that Bhakti Yoga is easier than Ashtanga Yoga. Now we can go back and consider Arjuna's admission in the 6th chapter, in verses 33 and 34, where he says that this process is not practical for me. Now, Prabhupada uses Arjuna's statements to to emphasize that Ashtanga Yoga is not practical and therefore one should chant Hare Krishna and practice Bhakti Yoga. So now, some commentators of the Gita, who critique Prabhupada's commentary, they say that Krishna never rejects the process of Ashtanga Yoga. Although Bhaktivedanta Swami used the impression that they refer to Prabhupada as Bhaktivedanta Swami. So Bhaktivedanta Swami used the impression that Krishna rejects the process of Ashtanga Yoga, that the Gita rejects the process of Ashtanga Yoga. So Krishna never does that. Krishna just tells Arjuna that it's difficult, but if you practice it, you will succeed. And you have to control the mind. If you don't control the mind, you will not be able to succeed. You will not get anything. So it seems as if Krishna never doesn't agree to Arjuna's reluctance about the process of Ashtanga Yoga. So, is Prabhupada not representing the Gita properly when he is saying that the Gita rejects the path of Ashtanga Yoga? Actually, we have discussed this earlier. Prabhupada's strategy of presentation is that he gives the conclusion of the Gita throughout the Gita. So, we see very clearly that at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna rejects all other paths. Sarva dharmān parityajya māmekam śaraṇam raja aham tvam sarva pāpebhyo mokṣeṣyāmi māśucaha. Krishna says that give up all varieties of religions and just surrender to me. If you surrender to me, then whatever sinful reactions you may get because of having given up other duties, because of having abandoned your other responsibilities, because of having not followed other paths, if you get any sinful reactions, I will take care of them. Don't worry. So Krishna here is very categorically telling, rejecting other paths. Parityajya. There can be very few words that are stronger than parityajya. Just give it up. Sarva dharma. And it's categorical. Sarva dharma. So that means if you look at the Gita, in its conclusion, it very clearly rejects all other paths and enthrones the path of bhakti. Maam ekam sharanam raja is clearly bhakti. So what Krishna does throughout, what Krishna does at the end of the Gita, Prabhupada does throughout the Gita in his purports. That is Prabhupada's compassion, that he wants to ensure that we don't miss the conclusion of the Gita, that we understand the conclusion properly, and we go properly along that conclusion. So now, when we talk about this point, that Prabhupada is giving the conclusion in the throughout in his purports, what about the flow of the Gita? Now, within the flow of the Gita also, Krishna does not deny the point that when Arjuna says that it is difficult, Krishna says it is difficult. So, the sixth chapter has been talking about Ashtanga. Krishna says, yes, practice. By practice, by abhyasa in the konte, vairagya nicha gruhete. By abhyasa and vairagya, one will move forward. And Krishna overall doesn't recommend specifically the process of Ashtanga Yoga over there also. Krishna says, do abhyas and do vairagya. So he says that one has to follow the process for transcendence and one has to control the mind. Then one will attain success. It's essential to control the mind. It's difficult, but it's essential. So, Krishna doesn't specifically endorse the path of Ashtanga Yoga. If we are looking for the endorsement by Krishna, we find it over here in the 8th chapter. The word sulabha is a very strong endorsement. And this is easy. It's easy and it will give the same destination that can be got by Ashtanga Yoga. Why not take it up? So that means what Krishna is doing is, in the 6th chapter, he's outlining Ashtanga Yoga, and there Arjuna expresses reservation, apprehension, and Krishna says, yes, but one has to keep practicing the path of transcendence. And thereafter, if we see Arjuna's, the context of the 6th chapter, the question after that is about a deviated yogi. So Krishna's question, answer also to that is nothing specifically to do with Ashtanga Yoga. It's generic. So both Arjuna's question and Krishna's answer are referring to generic topics. Arjuna's stimulation for the question is, the stimulation for Arjuna's both question is that the path of Ashtanga Yoga, which Krishna has just delineated in the 6th chapter, till 6.32, that is a difficult path. That's why he feels, oh, I don't think I can have the equanimity of the mind. I don't think I'll be able to succeed in one life. So that's why he asks those two questions. One is, the first question is from 6.33-34. And the second question is from 6.37 to 39. So either way, the point which I am making over here is, if this all this seems too technical, a simple point here is that Arjuna feels that the path of Ashtanga Yoga is difficult. And Krishna, in his response, neither rejects Ashtanga Yoga nor endorses Ashtanga Yoga. Krishna simply says that, yes, but one has to persevere in the transcendental path, and if one perseveres, one will get the supreme destination. Then after that, in the 7th chapter, Krishna introduces this, the process of Bhakti Yoga. And then in the 8th chapter, he contrasts Ashtanga Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. And he says that Bhakti Yoga is easy. So therefore, the answer to Arjuna's point that Tasyaham Nigraham Manye Vayor Vasudushkaram, that controlling the mind is dushkara, it is almost impossible. It is like, what is it like, he says? It is like fixing the mind on, it is like controlling the wind, it is impossible, he says. So Krishna's response is here, sulabha. Yes, actually fixing the mind, you can attain me easily. Fix the mind on me and you can attain me easily. So he is recommending the process of Bhakti Yoga as the easy way for attaining success in the transcendental path. Now, we may say actually fixing the mind on Krishna and fixing the mind constantly on Krishna is also not easy. Yes, ultimately, no spiritual path is entirely easy. You know, if achieving something material also requires effort and everything material that we achieve is temporary, then that which is going to give us eternal result, we can't expect that will come very easily. That will also require endeavor, no doubt. So when we understand this point that it will also require endeavor, so what? What next after that? When we have to understand that anyway there is endeavor, but relatively speaking, which is the easiest? It is Bhakti Yoga. Because the mind gets a positive engagement right from the beginning. There are various reasons why Bhakti Yoga is highest, is the best. But here, in the context of the mind, you know, just trying to withdraw the mind from the negative and then afterwards trying to probe to discover what is the positive reality on which to focus the mind, that is an onerous process, that is a burdensome process. But if one knows how to draw the mind back, and then one doesn't have to just focus on drawing the mind back, yes, one has to undoubtedly take the mind away from the negative, from the agitating, titillating, material temptations of this world, but one knows that I can fix the mind on Krishna, and Krishna is such a captivating, enchanting, fulfilling higher reality to fix the mind on. So therefore the whole process becomes much easier. Now if somebody tells us, please don't think of a blue monkey with a red tail. Now we may never thought of a blue monkey with a red tail, but when we are told that, think of it, immediately the mind will come with a picture. So the nature of the mind is that whenever it's told don't do anything, it often goes to that. So you tell the mind, don't think of this, don't think of this, don't think of this. You know, saying no is never pleasant. If we have something positive to say yes to, then the absorption in that positive enables us to say no to the negative much more easily. So this is the point, that this is the easy way. Ananya cheta satatam. Then, after describing this, so Srila Prabhupada's whole purport centers on the point that actually we have to fix the mind on Krishna. And here Prabhupada quotes from the... Now Prabhupada does a very interesting development of thought over here. The Lord helps such devotees in various ways. So in the Katha Upanishad it says, Prabhupada quote 1.2.23. So, yam evaisha vrunate tena labhyas tasyaisha atma vivrunate tanum swam. So, yam evaisha vrunate tena labhyas. So, the person whom the Absolute Truth selects, that is the person who understands the spiritual reality. That is the meaning. Yam evaisha vrunate, by whom vrunate is selected, that person attains tena labhyas. That person understands the spiritual reality. So, whom does Krishna select? That he explains in the Bhagavad Gita and other literature. He is not arbitrarily partial. He is reciprocal. And he is universally reciprocal. So if we approach him with devotion, we approach, want to understand him to be the Supreme Person, then he will reciprocate as the Supreme Person with us. So Krishna says, Yatha Mam Prapadyate 4.11, and then he says in Bhagavad Gita 10.10, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. So Krishna helps us. So now this is the second point. See, the first point is that it is much more easier to fix the mind on Krishna than it is to just withdraw the mind from material reality. That's what makes bhakti easy. Another reason why bhakti is easy is that it is Krishna who helps us to make spiritual advancement. Krishna gives us his mercy, Krishna gives us intelligence from within, by which we can fix the mind on him easily. So therefore, his mercy also makes it much more easy for us to gain the concentration of the mind on Krishna. Now, somebody may say that, okay, but Krishna says, first we have to practice Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Sorry, first we have to practice, in 10.10 Krishna says, Tesham Sattva Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mam Upayantite. First we have to serve him, you know, with affectionately. Bhajatam Priti Purvakam, then he will give us Buddhi. So what about when we don't have affection? Actually, we all have some affection. So it is not that only for the pure devotees Krishna gives Dadami Buddhi Yogam. Krishna gives for everyone. Now, depending on how much is our affection and how much is our intention to serve, Krishna will, in proportion, give us intelligence. So Srila Prabhupada in his letters frequently talks about when devotees come up with intelligent ways of spreading Krishna consciousness. The Prabhupada appreciates and he says that because you are so sincerely trying to serve Krishna, Krishna is giving you intelligence of how to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, how to share Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada would quote this for the Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam. So it is, Krishna can give us also guidance. And Krishna, anybody who has the intention to remember Krishna and has whatever little affection, with that intention and affection we try to serve. And Krishna will reciprocate. So, a devotee thinks of Krishna everywhere. So, in fact, a devotee creates the holy place wherever he goes. As Srila Prabhupada quotes over here from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada quotes over here. It was Sri Advaita who told Lord Chaitanya, wherever you are, O Lord, there is Vrindavan. What does this mean? He is saying that the essence of Vrindavan is the remembrance of Krishna. And if the Lord is himself present, then one can remember him very easily. And so a devotee can invoke Krishna's presence by remembrance everywhere and can remember Krishna everywhere. Therefore, it's not necessary for a devotee to be present in the holy place, nor does a devotee have to go to a secluded place as a yogi in a jungle. A devotee can be anywhere and everywhere and can remember Krishna. And then Prabhupada talks about the five rasas and he concludes again with the full Mahamantra. He says, you should chant Hare Krishna. That is the best way to remember Krishna. So now here Krishna establishes how his remembrance through the process of Bhakti Yoga is far easier. And therefore, it's preferable. So now he continues that theme and he seamlessly gels that theme into the next theme. Okay, how does one get the impetus to fix the mind on Krishna? Krishna says, if you fix the mind on him, then we can be easily attained. But then how does one get the impetus to fix the mind? So Krishna says, actually, one can think of the result of fixing the mind on him, and one can think of the result of not fixing the mind on him, or of fixing the mind, of letting the mind dwell on things other than him. So let's look at the next verses. So this is the next section starting. Mamupete punarjanma dukkhalema shashvatam naapnuvanti mahatmanah samsiddhim paramamgatah. So mamupete punarjanma. So this is a famous verse. We often quote the dukkhalema shashvatam section in it. Yes, actually, this word is Ukkale, it is Ashashvat. It's temporary and it is miserable. This is exactly opposite to the statement that this world is, that the movies and the novels, they have the idea and they lived happily ever after. So happily ever after, this is exactly the opposite of that. You know, Krishna says, Dukkale Ashashvatam. So it's not happy and it's Ashashvat. There is no ever after in this world. So So it's exactly the opposite, the conception. But although this is the focus of our quoting the verse normally, but let's look at what the context of the verse is and what the whole verse is saying. So Krishna is telling, he is making it as a, he's not making it as a declaration. I declare that this world is dukkhalaya shastam. He's just making it a passing fact. Yes, it's taken for granted that this world is dukkhalaya, but if you worship me, then you won't have to come back to me. Those who worship me, those who they will not have to take birth again, but they will attain the supreme destination, Paramahamgata. So from the Bhagavad Gita's perspective, it's like it's taken for granted that this world is dukkhalaya shashvatam. There is no need to argue and debate and declare. It's something which both the conversations have accepted. It's like, say, a doctor tells a person who is sick, if you take this treatment, then you can be discharged from the hospital and you can go back home. You don't have to come back to this miserable place. So now there's no need to discuss or debate that the hospital is a miserable place. Or a jail warden may say, if you behave yourself properly, you'll be discharged from the jail. And then you won't have to come back to the stinking, filthy place. So now neither the jail warden nor the prisoner, they are thinking, oh, this is a desirable place and I don't want to go out of here. Both of them know that the prisoner wants to go out. The question is how to go out. So like that, in the context of the Gita, he said that this world is dukkhalaya shashvatam, no doubt. And if you just maam upet, if you worship me, then you'll not have to come back to this world. Samsiddhim paramamgataha. You will attain. So those are Mahatmas. Those who are Mahatma, they will attain the supreme destination. So now, this is the second time the Bhagavad Gita uses the word Mahatma. So 8.15 is where is Krishna used it earlier? In 7.19, where he said that those who understand him to be Vasudeva Sarvamiti, Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanavan Mam Prapadyate, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, Samahatma Sudurlabha. The souls are the great souls, Mahatma, and they are very rare. So that was clearly referring to devotees, isn't it? Because the point is, Mam Prapadyate. Surrender is essentially an act of bhakti. So it's referring to those Mahatmas as devotees. And here also, if the previous verse is talking about Ananya Chetaha Satatam, and here also Mam Apetya is there. So here also the word Mahatma is used to refer to devotees. And the Bhagavad Gita refers again to the word Mahatma in the next chapter, where 9.13 will declare, Mahatmanastu mam partha, daivim prakritimashrita, daivim prakritimashrita, vajantyananya manaso, gyatva bhutadim avyayam. So, actually, this is that those who worship me wholeheartedly, knowing that I am imperishable, I am everything, that actually that understanding is similar to Vasudeva Sarvamiti. So they are also actually focusing on Krishna. That reference to Mahatma is also focusing on Krishna. It's not focusing on anything else. So Napnuvanti Mahatmanaha. So actually, this is the ultimate reality, and there is no reality beyond this. So the Mahatmas are those who understand Krishna to be the ultimate reality, nothing else. Now, when we talk about Paramahamgata, what is the Paramahamgata? Krishna will more elaborately talk about the supreme abode in this chapter only a little later. In 8.20, 21, 22, he will talk about it. And he will refer to it in 15.7 also, 15.6 also. So we know Paramahamgata is the supreme abode of Krishna, that is Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, which is described in the Brahma Samhita. So here, the point is that those who worship Krishna, they don't have to come back to this world. They will na punarjanma, they'll come back to him. They will attain the supreme destination. Now Krishna, what is their supreme destination? He's not mentioned it here. But we can correlate it with what Krishna has talked about earlier. Now Krishna has said in 4.9 that those who understand the transcendental nature of this activity, what happens? Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti so arjuna. So those who understand him in truth, they come back to him. So and now here Krishna is telling those who worship me, Mamupetya, they attain the supreme destination. So what is the supreme destination? Supreme destination is going back to Krishna. That can be inferred from that way. So now here onwards, Krishna will contrast between the temporary material world and the eternal spiritual world. The destination which one can get by worshipping Him, and a destination that one can get by not worshipping Him. That means this analysis is meant to serve as an impetus for fixing the mind in Krishna. If we fix the mind in Krishna, we get a wonderful result. If we don't fix the mind in Krishna, then what happens? We have to stay on in the miserable material world. So the temporariness of this material world is talked about in the next section, in this section onwards. So Krishna continues the theme here of the eternality of the gain when we fix the mind on Him. A Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartino Arjuna Mamupetitu Kaunteya Punarjanmana Vidyate. So A Brahma Bhuvana Loka. So from the topmost planetary system down to the lowermost, A Brahma Bhuvana. So right up to the planet of Brahmaji, one may go, Loka. What will happen? Punaravartino Arjuna, Punaravartino. One will come back again. But Mamupetya tu Kaunteya, Mamupetya. If one worships Krishna, then what happens? Then Punarjanmana Vidyate. So Krishna is giving two paths and two destinations. So the path of any other path. Now in the material world, the highest destination is the destination of Brahmaji. Krishna is saying, even if one does whatever best activities are possible, apart from bhakti, apart from fixing the mind on Him, the best result we can get is going to Brahmaji. And even that is temporary. If that is temporary, therefore, that will not give us an eternal result. But only worshipping Krishna will give us the eternal result. So now the question may come up that some people consider Brahma as about to be eternal. So is it eternal? No, it is not. It is actually temporary, because the abode of Brahma is also within the material world. It is in fact within one of the universes. So the lifespan of the universe is same as the lifespan of Brahmaji. So when Brahmaji dies, at that time his abode dies, and the universe is also destroyed. So Prabhupada quotes in the purport that by Panchagni Yagya one can attain Brahma Loka, but because Brahma Loka is temporary, one cannot stay there for a long time. So then now Prabhupada quotes interestingly Sridhar Swami from in his commentary in the Bhagavad Gita. What does Prabhupada quote? So Brahmane Sahate Sarve Samprapte Prati Sanchare Parasyante Krutatmanah Pravishyanti Parampadam. So Brahmane Sahate Sarve, Brahmaji along with his associates, Sarve Samprapte Prati Sanchare. So those who are engaged, Parasyante Krutatmanah, Parasyante Krutatmanah, those who are Parasya is the absolute with Kritatmana. Those who are engaged in the service, Pravishyanti Parampadam, they attain the supreme abode, the ultimate destination. So here is making the point that in some cases, if the Brahma is a pure devotee and his associates have, by the association of Brahma, you become pure enough to go back to the spiritual world, then at the time of the destruction of the universe, then they need not have to come back. They can continue on. They can, whatever devotions they have been practicing in Brahma Loka, at the end of the destruction, at the end or at the destruction of the universe, they continue that by being transferred to the spiritual world. They continue practicing devotional service. So this can happen, but this doesn't necessarily have to happen all the time. The point here is that even in Brahma's abode, if one is practicing Krishna consciousness constantly, then this will happen. Now we wonder, doesn't Brahmaji and his associates practice Krishna consciousness? Yes, they do, but Brahmaji and in general the heavenly planets are not primarily places of bhakti. They are places of punya. So punya and bhakti are not the same. In Swarga, those who do punya attain Swarga, and there also the Swargavasis do yajna and they live righteous lives. So by that righteous living, they are overall in accord with what is expected of the heavenly residents, but that righteous living is not bhakti. Indra is watching the apsaras dancing and he's enjoying that. And that is not bhakti yoga. And that is bhoga. But that bhoga is not considered sinful because he's done punya, and after doing punya in the earth, he's now attained those things as enjoyment, as rightful enjoyment. So therefore, actually what he's getting there is the result of his past punya. So generally, the residents of heavens don't perform punya. Sorry, they perform punya, they don't perform bhakti, and certainly not unalloyed bhakti. It's like there's too much enjoyment available over there to do unalloyed bhakti. You know, suppose we are doing japa in the morning, and we are told a magnificent feast is brought right in front of us. There's pulava, pakoda, puris, paratha, paneer sabji. Oh, big feast is there, and we're told now chant your 16 rounds, and your unrule is there. You can't take your eyes off the plate. You have to keep looking at the plate and you have to chant attentively. How attentive can we be in chanting? We'll be attentive, but not in chanting. We'll be attentive about what is there in the prasadam and when we can take it. So therefore, this will not help us actually too much. So it's difficult when there's too much pleasure available to fix the mind on Krishna. And that's why in the heavenly planets, they may not do papa. But for them to do Shuddha Bhakti is difficult. So in the Shiva Swami's command point is here that if they do Shuddha Bhakti, then they will get elevated from there. So if one has to anyway practice a serious pure devotional service, then why not practice it in earth itself and then go back to the spiritual world? Why get mixed up and go to Brahma Loka and there practice serious pure devotional service and then go back? You can just directly go back from here itself. That is the thrust of the message of the Gita. So now we wonder, how is Brahma's abode destroyed? And so then Krishna will describe that. How even Brahma's abode is temporary. Sahasra yuga paryantam aharyat brahmano vidhu ratri mrida sahasrantam teho ratri vidho janaha. So sahasra yuga paryantam. That actually, there are sahasra yugas. So Brahmaji lives for 1,000 years. Now the word yuga can be used for various terms. Yuga is basically a large unit of time. Now we have ourselves, we have multiple uses of the word. Kalyuga we have. So it's one yuga. It's a unit of time. Kalyuga has a different time duration, and then Dwapar Yuga has a different time duration. So yuga basically refers to a unit of time. How much unit of time? That will vary. So here the word yuga is used not for Kali Yuga or Dwapar Yuga, Trita Yuga. It is used for denoting the overall lifetime of Brahma. So it says that Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Aharyat Brahmano Viduhu. So for 1,000 Divya Yugas, that is cycles of the 4 Yugas, that is the day of Brahma. And then after that, there is the night of Brahma. So the day and the night of Brahma are Sahasra Yuga Paryantam. And then Ratrim Yuga Sahasrantam. And after that, the Ratri is also Yuga Sahasrantam for 1,000 years. And Teho Ratra Vidhojanaha. This is the Ratri Vidhojanaha. So the wise people understand this. So that means the point is, there is a cycle in Brahmaji's life also. There are a day which is for very, very long, a night which is for very, very long. But ultimately, it's temporary. And that's what the point that Prabhupada makes over here. These 100 years, that's referring to Brahmaji's life. So Prabhupada puts it in double quotes because the years are different from our years. These 100 years by earth calculation total to 311 trillion and 40 billion earth years. So by these calculations, the life of Brahma seems fantastic and interminable. But from the viewpoint of eternity, it is as brief as a flash of lightning. In the causal ocean, there are innumerable Brahmas rising and disappearing like bubbles in the Atlantic. Brahma and his creation are all part of the material universe, and therefore they are in constant flux. So, you know, somebody who lives for trillions of years, it's very difficult to conceive that as a bubble in the ocean. Prabhupada compares it to a bubble in the Atlantic. Bubble is last for a few moments. Once somewhere, some wave comes along, some turbulence comes along, the bubble bursts. So actually, once we conceive eternity, once we understand what is eternity, it's going to last forever and ever and ever, then in comparison with eternity, everything else appears insignificant. So that's why for us, from the relative perspective, Brahma's life may seem phenomenal. From the perspective of eternity, it is just as brief as Prabhupada used two metaphors. One is a lightning flash and as the lifespan of a bubble. Both temporary. Then in the next verse, he says that, continues this theme, what happens when the day of Brahma ends? Avyaktadvyaktayah sarvaha prabhavantyah ragame pratyagame praliyante tatraivavyakta sanyake. So avyaktadvyaktayah sarvaha. And actually from the unmanifest sarva, all living entities, vyaktayaha. And prabhavanti aharagame. Aharagame is at the start of the day.
And then ratriyagame praliyante.
That when the night comes, praliyante. Destroyed. Tatraiva vyakta samyake. This is referring to the cycle of cosmic manifestation and unmanifestation. So, you know, we have in physics the law of the conservation of energy. So matter is considered to be indestructible. It may be convertible from one form to another. It may be even convertible into energy. But convertibility is not the same as destructibility. So this principle is accepted even in the Vedic scriptures. So the whole substance of matter, that is eternal, that is indestructible. But actually, what we are attracted to in the material world is not the substance, we are attracted to the forms. Suppose, you know that in some traditions, when a person dies, that person's body is actually put on a tower on top, and then birds come and eat it. And that's the way they actually consider that the body can be utilized as food by others, and the body can be, is that's the tradition which they have. Now in that case, what happens is, say a bird has eaten, bird eats the body, and then the bird comes along and, you know, the bird discharges its refuse, and the bird falls, the refuse falls down, and it tells somebody, you know, this is actually your girlfriend. It's, what? So suppose somebody's girlfriend or boyfriend had died, and then the body is wasted, and the body gets converted into stool. So we will be appalled and repelled at that refuse of the bird. But we are attracted and captivated by the form of the opposite sex. Why is that? Because our attraction is to the form. It's not just to the substance. Substance may be the same, but we are attracted in the material world to the form. And that's why in this material world, when we become attached to the form, we suffer. So Krishna is telling over here, the form is eternal, but the form becomes manifest and the substance is eternal, but from the substance, form is sometimes manifest, sometimes unmanifest. So at the beginning of Brahma's day, the form becomes manifested. At the end of Brahma's day, the form becomes unmanifested. In this way, there is a cycle which goes on and on and on. And this is goes on for the entire lifetime of Brahma. Now, Krishna will continue this discussion. The emphasis of this discussion is that actually everything is temporary. Bhuta grama saivayam bhutva bhutva praliyate ratryagame vasha partha prabhavatyah ragame. So, bhuta grama saivayam. But actually, bhutagrama, the whole aggregate of all living is bhutva bhutva praliyate. Again and again, Bhutva, Bhuta means they come into being, take birth, and pralayate, they are destroyed. Ratryagame avashah partha. So, Ratryagame, when night comes, avashah. So, the avashah means helplessly. The pralayate, the destruction happens helplessly. And then prabhavatya, again, at the time of manifestation, the manifestation happens at aharagame, at the time of day. So, the point here is, to highlight how we are not in control. You know, if we study the history of the world, even from the perspective of whatever modern science knows in the last 1,000-2,000 years, we will see that, you know, when nature discharges its wrath, at that time such devastation can happen. An entire civilization can just wipe it out completely. Because of, say, one river just turning its course. And the Saraswati River, it is supposed to have gone from the Rajasthan area. When the Saraswati River just turned course, then Saraswati River dried out, and eventually the whole Greenland became a wasteland. It became a desert. So, one calamity can just, when nature unleashes its force, that which is a... It's a flourishing city like Pompeii. One earthquake and the whole thing can just be destroyed permanently. One moment, everything is gone. So actually, we often feel that we have a lot of control in the world. I can do, I can go here, I can do this, I can achieve that. And we have this illusion of control. But then, as compared to the working of nature, we're avashaha, we're helpless. Our body is so fragile that, you know, we'll be walking along the road and one boom, one vehicle comes and hits us from behind. One blow that can prove to be fatal. Or inside the body from somewhere, one bug can come inside, one germ, and that can destroy us. So one bug, one blow can fell us individually. And similarly, one slap of material nature can destroy an entire city or entire civilization also. So these are what is within our experience. And our experience is so limited. We see that sometimes some tsunamis or some hurricanes, some cyclones, something like that comes up and that causes so much devastation. Within our limited experience also, we can see the frightening fury and power of nature. But here Krishna is talking about at the universe, at universal cosmic time scales, and he's telling that actually just the creation, we just brought into creation when the day of Brahma comes and we are annihilated. We means not our body, but our material existence. The living entities are created, the living entities are living entity, the aggregate of the living entities, bhutva, bhutva, pralayate. So the arena for action, it's, we are helpless. Sometimes we just cast into the arena and sometimes we just drawn out of the arena. So we are, when we understand this helpless situation of ours, then we want to seek something eternal, something lasting, something that won't let us down. Therefore, the important point here is to recognize that in this world, there is everything else which is temporary, and it is only Krishna who is the eternal reality. Apart from him, everything else is temporary. Prabhavatya aharagame. So here, let's discuss the Brahma's lifetime a little bit more. So Brahma's lifetime, Prabhupada explains in the purport that, during the daytime of Brahma, they can exhibit their activities on higher and lower planets within this material world. But at the coming of Brahma's night, they are all annihilated. So here, the point is, there are higher and lower planets, but ultimately everything here is temporary. So within our temporary lifespan, the disparity of higher and lower may seem very significant. Somebody is wealthy, somebody is traveling in a car, and I am traveling in a local itself. That person is traveling in a plane, I am traveling in a train. The disparity may seem huge. That person lives in a lives in a villa, I have to live in a condo. So this may seem a huge difference. But when we understand it's temporary, then we don't get so worked up by it. Because we understand that ultimately, what is the eternal decision that we get, that is what is going to really matter. So again, we see in this purport, Prabhupada is quoting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra full. So the emphasis is remember Krishna. Only by remembering Krishna can we attain him. So now, let's look at the. Now, Krishna, after describing this material world, its temporary nature, now he starts describing the spiritual world. Parastasmatu bhavonyo vyakto vyaktat sanatanah ihasa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu na vinashyati. So, parastasmat. So, there's a transcendental nature. Tu bhavo nyo, bhava, bhava is nature, anya. It's another nature that is there. Vyakto vyaktat sanatanah. That there is unmanifest and manifest. Sanatanah. So, yasa sarveshu bhuteshu. In this world, there is much that exists. Sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu. When everything in this world is destroyed, that navinashyati, that stays as it is. So Krishna is reassuring us that although even Brahma's abode is destructible, but that does not mean that all of existence is destructible. There is parastasmat bhavan, there is another nature, which is not destroyed. And Krishna is actually referring to it to in a anya, very categorically, it's different. So in this world there is vyakta, avyakta, there is manifest and unmanifest nature, but there are both are temporary. And there is another nature which is eternal. See, actually, it is only the spiritual that is eternal. In this world, many people mistake the mental to be the spiritual. And they think what is inside is spiritual. But no, Krishna is saying, so the mental may be unmanifest to us. But although it's unmanifest, that is not spiritual. Mental is also material. So like that, in the material world, something is manifest, something is unmanifest. But neither of them is eternal. What is ultimately eternal is, that is spiritual. Ashyatsu navinashyati, that is the nature. And that is the eternal nature, when all in this world is destroyed. So, Krishna's superior nature, call it energy, is completely opposite in quality to material nature. Completely opposite in quality. What does completely opposite mean? Actually, in science, they have the conception of antimatter. And Prabhupada used this notion of antimatter to present spirit. And he wrote a book called Easy Journey to Other Planets, in which he said actually the actual antimatter is described in the Bhagavad Gita, and that is spirit. And scientists have the concept of antimatter as something which, when matter and antimatter come together, both will be destroyed. But Prabhupada said that this antimatter is not really anti. You know, it is not adequately anti. For antimatter to be truly anti, it has to be, as Prabhupada says, completely opposed to matter. So it's not that when matter and antimatter come together, both will be destroyed. If antimatter is truly anti of matter, then its property should be that matter is destructible, antimatter should be indestructible. So matter generally drags us down, spirit lifts, spirit itself is lifts up, and lifts up, spirit lifts other things up. Matter is unconscious, spirit is conscious. So there's a radical difference between the two. And that understanding is highlighted by the point now that matter may be manifest or unmanifest, but parastasmat bhavanya. That there's another bhava which is beyond the two. Now Krishna will describe for the first time in the Bhagavad Gita a little bit more about this abode. What is that? Avyakto akshara ityuktas tamahu paramam gatim yam prapyena nivartante tadham paramam mama. So here Krishna clearly now completes the link. He says that paramam mama, tadham paramam, this is my supreme abode. So repeatedly Krishna has talked about that person, you will attain the ultimate supreme destination. But what is that supreme destination? He makes it clear. So in 8.15 he has said that those who worship him, samsiddhim paramamgata, will attain the paramamgata, supreme destination. Taddham paramam mama. So Krishna is using almost a similar word, paramam, paramam. And he's saying that is my abode. And what are the characteristics of this abode? So what he mentions is yampra penani vartante. If you attain this, you will not come back. So that is also similar to what Krishna has talked, yadgatvanani vartante. Krishna has talked about it every time. Once you go there, you will not come back. So he has talked about it in several places, but here in this chapter itself, in 15 and 16, he has talked about it. So taddham paramam mama. But once one goes there, one doesn't come back. Beyond that, here also he is talking about further characteristics. Avyakta akshara ityuktas. Now somebody may say that, what is happening over here? Avyakta and akshara. So we have to understand here that words can have different meanings in different contexts. So in the previous verse, the word avyakta referred to material but unmanifest. So actually, subtle matter is unmanifest to us and spirit is also unmanifest to us. So in the previous verse, Krishna has said, what I am talking about is vyakto vyakta sanadana. It is what I am talking about is actually beyond the manifest and unmanifest matter. But now he is using the same word, avyakta. Avyakta is using to refer to the spirit itself. So we have to understand that avyakta doesn't always mean the same thing. So subtle matter is avyakta and spirit is also avyakta. So in the previous verse 8.20, Krishna is not necessarily referring to subtle matter. Yes, he is referring to when all of matter is, all material existence is withdrawn, then it exists as the mahatattva, the inactive mahatattva. So not in balance, it's in equilibrium, it is completely frozen, silent. Pradhan it is called. So the nomenclature may vary at some places, but in general. So Krishna, that is also avyakta, and here also the spiritual world is avyakta. But they are two different things. Both are used, both have the characters of being avyakta, not being manifest to our sense perception. But one is material, the other is transcendental. And akshara, avyakta, akshara iti yuktas. Akshara means that it is infallible. Akshara. So, aksharam brahma paramam svabhavo dhyanatma muchyate. Krishna has used the word akshara right at the start of this chapter itself to describe the brahma in 8.3. The first line answer to Arjuna's seven questions in 8.1 and 2 is aksharam brahma paramam. So, akshara, so brahma is aksharam. It is not destructible, it is not fallible. So here he is saying it is unmanifest and it is infallible. So fallibility here refers to the fallacy of the fallibility in terms of destructibility. So it's indestructible, akshara. So here Krishna is referring that abode is avyakta akshara ityuktas. It is known to be avyakta and akshara. And tamahum paramam gatim. Now, in case somebody has any doubt that, okay, the Paramahamgati and Krishna's Paramdham are different, this verse clearly resolves that. There is no destination higher than Krishna's abode. The same verse is using the word Paramahamgatim. Here he uses the word Paramahamgatim, supreme destination. And in the same verse, he is using the word Dhamma Paramamama. So, in this way, what he is saying is very, very clear here. Taddhama paramam mama. So the same line says that this is supreme destination and this is my supreme abode, my transcendental abode. So the point is that Krishna's abode is the supreme destination. There is no destination higher than the Lord's abode. And Prabhupada quotes from the Brahma Samhita, famous verses describing Krishna's beauty. So that abode is described briefly here and it is described much more in the Brahma Samhita. So now Krishna will describe how one can attain that abode. Purusha sapara partha bhakta labhyastvananyaya yasyanta sthani bhutani yena sarvam idam tatam. So here he makes it clear पुरुषः सपरः पार्थ, दैट पुरुषः इज परः, इज सुप्रीम, नो वन ग्रेटर देन हिम. एंड हाउ इज दैट पुरुषः अटेन्ड? भक्त्या लभ्यस्तु अनन्यया, अटेन्ड बाय अनन्य भक्ति. एंड what are the characters of that purusha? Yasyanta sthani bhutani. So, yasya antaha, all of material existence situated within him. And yena sarvam idam tatam, that he is inside everything. So this is a very beautiful statement, that everything is inside him and he is inside everything. So how is that possible? He is inside everything and everything is inside him. That is possible when we understand that his inconceivable nature. You know, he can manifest himself in multiple forms. One simple way to understand it is that as Mahavishnu, everything is inside him. And as Shirodaksha Vishnu, as the Paramatma, he is inside everything. That's of course one way of looking at it. But there are other ways also of looking at him. Asyantahastani bhutani, that is Brahman effulgence, the all-pervading. So everything is situated in Brahman. And actually, the Lord exists everywhere. So, in that sense, this verse is referring not to the Brahman, it is referring to Purusha Saparapartha. It is referring to the Supreme Person, Purusha Saparapartha. So, this is the Lord is inside everything, Lord is inside everything, and everything is inside Him. But when we have devotion inside us for Him, then we attain his eternal destination, attain his supreme abode. We attain that supreme person. So attaining Krishna and attaining his abode are the same thing. When we love Krishna, naturally we return back to him, to his abode. So Krishna, how does one attain? Krishna makes it very clear. The word is bhaktya. Bhaktya labhyasthananya. It is by bhakti alone that we can attain him. No, not by any other process. So Prabhupada quotes here from the Gopal Dev Upanishad. Eko Vashi Sarvaga Krishna. Eko Vashi. That actually the Lord will stay at one place, but Sarvaga, he is all pervading Krishna. He goes everywhere. Means he goes to different places for performing pastimes, but he also pervades his influence everywhere through his energies and through his all pervading manifestations. So the point is that actually, this is the wonderful abode of the Supreme Lord, and it's the wonderful Supreme Lord who resides in that abode. So, in this section, from verses 15 to 22, what has happened? There has been a contrast between the process of, there has been emphasis on fixing the mind on Krishna. That happened in 14. And how does one get the impetus to fix the mind on Krishna? By contemplating how everything else is temporary, and fixing the mind on anything else will ultimately only end in misery. Therefore, let us fix the mind on Krishna. And their connection, the description of the temporary nature of even Brahma's abode is described, the temporary nature of all of material existence is described, and then the eternal spiritual abode of Krishna, which is life's supreme destination, Paramam Gata and Paramam Dham, that is described. So we will discuss in our next class the subsequent section where Krishna says that a devotee should focus on remembering him and not worry about various other methods by which one can attain that supreme destination. That we'll discuss in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.